Is your appetite sometimes out of control? Are you unable to stop eating even when you're full? Download our new Intelligent Medicine video, Defensive Eating, Taming Your Addiction to Food. There's a physiological basis for food addiction. The food industry has gripped our brains using powerful food science. Find out what we can do about it. Go to drhoffman.com to download this important video. We will arm you with proven strategies to change your eating behavior forever. Go to drhoffman.com. Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, we join you with health information, news that you can use, facts and stories beneficial for your health and for your loved ones. Our number is 800-321-0710. Just this week only, our usual number is 888, and I won't say it. It's now 800-321-0710. We're broadcasting from beautiful WOR studios in downtown Manhattan, and I'm rejoining my old posse at WOR, Bob and Ira and Noah and Chris. It's homecoming day here at WOR, and we're using the WOR call number, 800-321-0710, for questions related to nutrition and health. And we got a lot to talk about this week. Among the big stories, vitamin E. Well, it turns out that certain health problems can increase your requirement for vitamin E. According to a new story out of Ohio State University, metabolic syndrome leads 1 in 3 Americans to need more vitamin E. Now, that means that approximately 1/3 of Americans may need more vitamin E than healthy people. What is metabolic syndrome? Well, how might you know that you have metabolic syndrome? If you have high triglycerides, if you have an elevated hemoglobin A1C, even if you don't have overt diabetes, your doctor may say, well, you're moving towards diabetes. You have pre-diabetes. Well, if you've got a waistline and you divide your waistline by your hip circumference, and for men, it's greater than 1, or for women, it's greater than 0.8. Do the math. Well, then you very well might have metabolic syndrome, as do 1/3 of Americans. According to research, on average, humans absorb about 10% of a dose of the most common vitamin E supplement if it's eaten without any fat. It turns out that there's a way to get your vitamin E to work better for you. Fat helps your absorption of vitamin E. And it turns out that milk, you know, a lot of people have problems with milk. They're milk intolerant or they have milk allergies. But it turns out that dairy is a pretty good way to accompany your vitamin E to increase your absorption. But if you've got metabolic syndrome, think additional vitamin E because your body may need it. Vitamin E is the body's premier antioxidant. It's necessary for protecting all the cells of your body. And so, therefore, increased vitamin E may be in order for people who have metabolic syndrome. 800-321-0710 is our number. Please feel free to call us with your questions related to medicine or nutrition. All right, this story, we know this already. Sugary drinks increase diabetes and heart disease risk. All right, a new study suggests that there's an urgent need for public health strategies to reduce the consumption of these drinks. Researchers reviewed and analyzed data from recent studies, and they found that consuming just 1 or 2 servings a day of a sugary drink, be it a cola, be it Mountain Dew, all of these are sweetened with high fructose corn syrup, which is a form of sugar that is even worse for you than table sugar. It turns out that just 1 or 2 servings a day of soda is linked to as high as a 25% greater risk of developing type 2 diabetes, a 35% greater risk of heart attack or fatal heart disease, and a 16% increased risk of stroke. So, you know, this whole thing with the beverage industry saying, you know, moderation, you know, if you have an active lifestyle, you know, consume these beverages in moderation. Don't, you know, have a 64-ounce bottle of Pepsi every day. We get it. They're making portion sizes smaller. Well, it turns out that the risk is even greater than we thought with even, quote, moderation. They're all about moderation, but zero tolerance seems to be a better way to go. Keep in mind that the fructose in fruit, this does not mean we should stop eating fruit. For some people who are very carbohydrate sensitive, they have to limit their intake of fruit and never drink juices because juices are just concentrated fruit sugar. But fruit contains fructose in moderate amounts, much less than a soda, but also in a fiber-rich package that's rich in other important nutrients. So don't forego fruit entirely because of this study. So, you know, this is a little reminiscent of, you know, the tobacco industry and what happened early on. You know, they said, well, you know, smoking, not such a big deal. Then they said, well, you know, moderate your smoking. They gave us filter cigarettes. They gave us cigarettes that were safer, that had recessed filters. And pretty soon you had to huff and puff and you barely got any smoking. But still, it turned out that even very, very small amounts of cigarette smoking, and now passive smoking, has been linked to cardiovascular disease, stroke, and cancer. And so a similar thing is happening with the beverage industry. And, you know, what they're doing is they're switching it out and they're telling people to have energy drinks instead. Well, the same ingredient is present in energy drinks, high fructose corn syrup. And here's some bad news for kids who play sports. You got a kid who plays soccer, heads the ball, or plays football, even baseball. You can get head injuries. Very interesting experiment done with mice. You know, those of you, you know, animal lovers and people concerned about humane treatment of laboratory animals, maybe you want to hold your ears on this. What they did is they gave one group of mice a diet rich in high fructose corn syrup. Another group had a diet that was regular mouse food, mouse chow. They then subjected these mice cruelly, unfortunately, to head injuries. And in the aftermath of the head injuries, the mice that were not on the high fructose corn syrup diet navigated mazes very effectively. They had minimal cognitive damage from the head injury. But the mice that had been pre-treated with high doses of high fructose corn syrup, they had a lot of trouble navigating the maze. So in effect, what we're doing with our young athletes is we're replicating this mouse experiment. We're feeding kids large amounts of high energy drinks rich in high fructose corn syrup. And then we're subjecting them to the risk of head injuries, and lots of trouble can ensue, you know, so keep that in mind. And another study, while we're on the subject of high fructose corn syrup, this is particularly insidious. The type of sugar you eat may affect your cravings for high caloric foods down the line. They looked at 24 healthy volunteers and they found that compared with consuming glucose, consuming fructose resulted in more activity in the brain's reward regions. It lit up the brain, literally, increased responses to images of food later, and created a tendency to choose eating a high-calorie food over a future time period. In other words, it stokes your appetite and your craving for high-calorie foods when you consume fructose. So what's up with that? You know, highly addictive substances are being pitched to our kids and, you know, they're getting hooked to their great disadvantage, not just in terms of cardiovascular disease, but they get a head injury that potentiates their risk. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Our number is 800-321-0710. We'll be talking to callers in just a moment here on this week's edition of Intelligent Medicine. Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. A little bit of my favorite headbanging music. Yeah, it gets here. Blood circulating, you know, as long as you don't get a concussion. All right. This week in our newsletter and on our website, a very interesting quiz. Test your health literacy, because Americans' science literacy is abysmal, according to a new study that was recently reported on in the Los Angeles Times. People just, they don't know hardly anything about science. And this puts us at risk of making some real poor choices when it comes to health. You know, there's so many options available. You know, they say, well, would you like surgery? Would you like, you know, or we can do hormone therapy? You know, it's all these different considerations. They actually put you in the driver's seat, making choices that your health literacy has you ill-prepared for. So check out drhoffman.com and take the health IQ test. Test your health literacy. And, you know, if you score poorly, bone up by listening to Intelligent Medicine podcasts. We've got some great podcasts at drhoffman.com. You can download them. You can subscribe via iTunes. And you can augment your health literacy. If you score well, congratulations to you. You are a true aficionado of Intelligent Medicine. Let's talk now to David. By the way, our number 800-321-0710. David, welcome.
Hi, Dr. Hoffman. I'm 71, and I recently lost about 30 pounds. I'm 188 and 5'10". I'm still dieting. I play tennis, and I've just been diagnosed with some additional arthritis, but now of the hip.
Yeah.
Now, I know some doctors recommend injecting fluids into that, or I know they do stuff for the knee, and one orthopedic surgeon said they might be able to do that for the hip. And I was wondering, are there any bad side effects to that, or do you recommend anything in particular with that other than eventually I might need a new hip, they said?
Yeah, you know, eventually you might need a hip replacement, but there are some things you can do on the way to that. You can use hyaluronic acid injections. You can also use platelet-rich plasma. And, you know, these are some things that you can try. Sometimes, you know, an injection of steroids will temporarily improve things. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you want to avoid too many of those because steroids have an erosive effect on the bone in your hip.
Right.
And so, and usually, you know, they just offer temporary relief. And sometimes, you know, you go out and you play like crazy and then you actually may hurt yourself worse because you have this, you know, you're under the illusion that your hip is less painful.
Exactly. That was my concern because one arthritic doctor gave me Atifax, which is like a couple of a pain reliever. But if you play too much, you could be damaging myself.
Right.
And I am playing less tennis.
Right. Hey, listen, you know, you've got to sometimes adapt, you know, do other things. Hey, you know what I do a lot of these days is, you know, I still continue to run and, you know, pound the pavement, but I do a little bit less of that. And I find swimming is just a great aerobic workout because you can swim for like, you know, 45 minutes and you get a fantastic workout and no wear and tear whatsoever in your knees, your hips, your back. It's great. Give it a shot.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. So, but do you recommend any particular place that has those injections? Do most doctors do it, or you?
No. And that's not something that I do. Thanks for your call, David. All right, this item has us a little concerned because, you know, we know that a lot of patients experience drug reactions. All right, so, you know, what percentage of hospitalized patients would you say, there's a little health IQ test, what percentage of hospitalized patients would you say might experience drug-related problems? Well, it turns out that a very high percentage of patients in the hospital have them. But what about outside the hospital? It's estimated that 51% of all patients outside hospitals and 54% of hospitalized patients experience drug-related problems. So, and pharmacists estimate this to affect 61% of all patients in healthcare. So we can almost need to set up a separate category of disease. We have diseases caused by viruses, we have cancer, we have circulatory problems, and we have a large segment of the pie chart, diseases caused by the very medications that we use to treat disease. The majority of people suffer from drug-related side effects. It's a really scary stat. All right, let's talk to Dolores, welcome.
Good morning, Doctor. Yes, this is Dolores speaking.
How you doing? It's actually afternoon, but well, you know.
Afternoon. Yes, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm a little behind.
I'm a little jet lagged too. I just got in from Chicago, so you know, I'm on.
Well, Doctor, I'm so glad I got through to you. I've tried before with no success, but this is my problem. I have what has been diagnosed as vestibular imbalance.
Right.
I'm in very good shape otherwise. My mind works pretty well. I take care of myself. I live alone, and I'm fine, except that I fall over so easily. I must walk with a cane.
Yeah, you know, let me explain what's going on. It's, first of all, this is really sometimes hard to diagnose precisely what's going on, because there's so many elements to this.
I was wondering if it was sugar or salt or anything like that.
Yeah, it could be. And, you know, it's worth doing a diet modification to see if there's a trigger for this. And, you know, certainly, you know, getting on an elimination diet, you can see if there's a possible dietary trigger. You know, get on a very clean diet, avoid major food allergens like wheat and dairy. That could make, you know, for some patients the results are remarkable. Also, keeping blood sugar stable can make a big difference, because some patients are dizzy and unstable because their blood sugar is bouncing all around. So that there are dietary considerations. But when it's not diet, it could be other things. It could be changes in your brain, in the balance center of your brain. You know, just like, you know, your eyes age and your ears age and your knees age, your balance center in the inner ear can age, and you actually then you know, have this type of problem. And what the appropriate treatment for that is something called vestibular rehabilitation. Now, you know who developed this therapy? An amazing doctor named Dr. Ronald Hoffman. No, not me. There's actually an ear, nose, and throat doctor, a colleague of mine here in New York, with an identical name. Who developed, he's actually one of the guys most instrumental in developing this form of physical therapy, but for people with balance problems, and it helps. Other nutrients that can sometimes help to nourish the inner ear, restore circulation. Ginkgo biloba can be helpful for some. Another nutrient that I'm exploring for inner ear problems and tinnitus is something called nicotinamide riboside. It's a brand new nutrient. But it's very exciting because it seems to be helpful in admittedly some early small studies for tinnitus, for ringing in the ears. And it may also help patients who suffer from vestibular problems. So it's, the brand name is Niacel, N-I-A-C-E-L. And, you know, I'm not promising a rose garden on this, but some of my patients with inner ear problems, tinnitus, Meniere's, have responded to Niacel. So it's worth checking it out. It's the product that's available through Nutritionally Oriented Physicians. It's available on our website at drhoffman.com. And you can check it out. It's a nutrient that's brand new, just marketed. And I think it's going to be a candidate for CoQ10 status eventually, because it really works on the energy metabolism, helps brain function. It is similar in terms of its function on the mitochondria, which is the powerhouse of the cell. So it might prove useful for these types of problems. Good luck with that, Dolores, but absolutely consider vestibular rehabilitation, because that may be one of the ways that you can help to overcome this problem. All right. 800-321-0710 is our number. And when we return, we're going to talk about a most extraordinary athlete. He's an Ironman at the tender age of... You'll find out. This is Intelligent Medicine. Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Our number, 800-321-0710. For this week only, it's 800-321-0710. Let me tell you about an extraordinary athlete. He's an Ironman. If you don't know what that entails, first you swim for 2.4 miles. That's an extraordinary feat in and of itself. Then you get out of the water and you cycle for an additional 112 miles. Okay, you're not done yet. Then you run a conventional marathon. That's 26 miles. Now I've never done that. I've done conventional basic Olympic distance triathlon. That's a 0.9-mile swim, and then it's a 24-mile bike ride, and then it's followed by a 6-mile run. And that's plenty, let me tell you. It's quite the ordeal. And I completed in, 3 hours and change. I never broke less than 3 hours. But there are contestants who they're gathered right now in Hawaii to do the premier Ironman. But these races are so popular that they book out almost immediately. You have to be literally with your finger poised at your computer to sign up precisely when the signups begin to get a place in these races. They're just so popular. So there's a guy who's doing this. His name is Lou Hollander, and he's a senior guy. How old do you think this guy is? He's 84 years old, and he's from Oregon. He's now preparing for his 59th such race. He's gearing up to break the Guinness World Record for oldest competitor, which he said himself at the age of 82. He's 84, so I guess he skipped a year. Now he's back. Here's what he says. This is his philosophy. He says, you get the first 40 years of life free, and then you have to pay attention. That's a pretty good way to put it. You kind of get a pass. Whatever you do at 40 determines what you can do at 80. We're all going to die. I'm going to die. You're going to die. The only things you can control are the quality of your life and the length of your life. So go anaerobic every day. In other words, push yourself a little bit so that you're a little out of breath. And the consequent stress will lead your body to adapt and improve. So this guy is amazing. He had a setback last year. He was unable to complete his 24th Ironman Hawaii because he'd completed the swimming and cycling, but knew he would be unable to finish the marathon before the 17-hour cutoff point. Because 17 hours they give you, and then they close the finish line. And he just said, yeah, I don't think I can finish the marathon in time. This guy is a study in persistence. And no, you don't have to do this to be fit. I mean, this is an extreme example of what some people are doing. Hey, it's an inspiration to the rest of us. We're not Iron Men. Maybe we're tin soldiers, but we still persist. All right. Aspirin may double the life expectancy of cancer patients. This, according to a headline. Now, this is oversimplified. This does not mean that aspirin is the answer for cancer. But it's a very interesting study of 14,000 people with cancer in the gastrointestinal tract. I guess that would be colon cancer, stomach cancer, possibly esophageal cancer, maybe even pancreatic cancer. And it turns out that in these 14,000 people, regular users of aspirin were twice as likely to be alive after 4 years. That's pretty good. That compares extraordinarily favorably to many forms of expensive, dangerous, toxic chemotherapy. The most common sites of cancer were colon, rectum, and esophagus. And it's already known that frequent use of aspirin can reduce your risk of developing colon cancer. But this has not yet been studied. You already have cancer, and then you take aspirin to slow the progression of cancer. Very interesting. And, I've often pushed back against the recommendation that everyone take aspirin after a certain age. And I still believe that, is that a lot of people are told, you're 45 or you're 50 or you're 60, you start taking aspirin now because you're at high risk of a heart attack. Well, no. A lot of people, I myself, I just turned 63. Not at high risk for a heart attack. Very low cardiovascular risk because of, exercise and a good lipid profile. Why take aspirin to avoid the very, very tiny likelihood of a heart attack when there's a higher likelihood that it could have an erosive effect on my gastrointestinal tract, cause me gastritis, or even worse, an ulcer with gastrointestinal bleeding? It happens thousands of times in America to people even taking a baby aspirin, 81 milligrams of aspirin, so-called baby aspirin, for cardiovascular prevention. But when it comes to cancer, maybe, just maybe, people at high risk, people already diagnosed, we can use aspirin as a potential tool in our armamentarium against cancer. So think about that possibly. All right, this item, this is an example of tough love for sure. Stephen Asante, age 33, was in a Rhode Island hospital where he had checked in to lose weight as a prelude to getting gastric bypass. You see, you can't just, if you, like he, weigh 800 pounds, you cannot simply check yourself into a hospital and get gastric bypass. Because the rules are, you got to get a little healthier before you can get a gastric bypass. Because somebody, 800 pounds, very high risk of dying on the operating table. So they said, okay, we're going to check you in and we're going to put you on a strict program and you're going to lose some weight in preparation for your gastric bypass. But he blew it because he ordered out pizza. Poor guy. Example of tough love. He was kicked out of the hospital weight loss program for ordering pizza. He had made it for 80 days. He was getting the help he needed, where he lost a mere 20 pounds. But ordering pizza violated the care plan, and the hospital told him he had to leave. So, you know, now he rides in the back of an SUV, because that's the only vehicle that can carry him, while his father drives the roads of Rhode Island looking for someone who can help. It's a sad story, but, you know, addiction is addiction. And there's a companion story about this. It has to do with gastric bypass and the high likelihood that people, after undergoing gastric bypass, you know, think, like, problem solved. You lose scads and scads of weight, and you feel good, you feel better about yourself. But no, there is a high risk of suicide, according to a new study, in people who have undergone gastric bypass. Now, I could think of a couple of reasons. One is that the very same mental condition that causes people to become grossly overweight may persist regardless of whether they lose the weight. So problem not solved. The problem is in the brain. It's not in the fat pads that surround your abdomen. It's in your head. And simply losing weight, people may realize, like, hey, wait a minute, this is not the answer to my life's prayers. And that, with a dawning realization that other problems persist. And simply slicing out a section of your intestinal tract is not the answer. The other possibility, and this is a very distinct possibility in my mind, is that if you have a gastric bypass, it is extremely likely that if you don't get very careful nutritional follow-up with a nutritionally oriented physician like myself, because I take care of a lot of these patients have rampant nutritional deficiencies. They have because they've been bypassed, they have malabsorption. So they may have malabsorption of many critical nutrients. Vitamin B12, which is a very, you know, which a deficiency of which can cause depression. Magnesium deficiency, very common. Vitamin D deficiency, very common. Iron deficiency, rampant among patients who've undergone bypass. So, yeah, maybe it's if they got the right kind of nutritional and psychological follow-up, maybe we could curb this terrible epidemic, because it having undergone this arduous surgery to then take your own life. What a terrible waste. And we need to do better with these patients. We've got some wonderful success stories at the Hoffman Center of patients who've undergone the surgery, but just having the surgery is not a quick fix. It involves a lifetime commitment to exercise, the right kind of eating, and even good mental habits. Many of her patients involved in spirituality, involved in meditation and stress reduction, because that should really be a teachable moment. You get that big surgery, and it should signal a big life change. I'm not inalterably opposed to the surgery, because for some people, that's what's necessary. But then we need the appropriate follow-up. All right, 800-321-0710 for calls. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
A regular dose of intelligent medicine injected directly into your inbox. Subscribe to Dr. Hoffman's free newsletter. Just go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. And once again, it's time to tell you about SuperBeats. SuperBeats is something that I've been using to enhance my athletic performance. But let's forget for a moment athletic performance. You know, there are studies that show that nitric oxide is something that can enhance endurance. And both college and pro football teams and Olympic athletes use it to boost their performance. But I'm not talking about that. Nitrates convert to nitric oxide in the body. And nitric oxide can help boost circulation, relax arteries, and maintain healthy blood pressure levels. And that's one of the reasons why I'm really excited about this product and the technology of delivering all the benefits of three whole beets in just a couple of scoops of a delicious tasting powder that you can dissolve in water. So join me and take the Intelligent Medicine Heart Health Challenge. And when you order two boxes of Neo40 is a convenient lozenge that dissolves on your tongue and also delivers the benefits of SuperBeats. You can use both SuperBeats and Neo40 together. If you order two boxes of Neo40, you'll get a 30-day supply of SuperBeats free, so you can try both. Plus, you get a free book about the science behind nitric oxide, free saliva testing strips, and free shipping along with a money-back guarantee. Neo40 and SuperBeats together, it's the real deal. They're tested, patented, and they work. I've done the homework on this. Plus, now SuperBeats comes in black cherry flavors, so you have no reason not to give it a try. Call 800-738-2198. That's 800-738-2198, or go to intelligentbeats.com. Again, that's 800-738-2198, or go to intelligentbeats.com. Okay, this item for sufferers of fibromyalgia. By the way, if you suffer from fibromyalgia, which is a painful body aching condition, but it's also associated with fatigue and depression, it's a debilitating condition that is much underestimated. It may affect not just millions of Americans, but tens of millions of Americans. There's a wonderful book called From Fatigue to Fantastic by Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. And I interviewed him this week with some insights about fibromyalgia, but also about how to beat your sugar cravings. And I thought, well, you know, this guy's a great author, and he's written an amazing book about fibromyalgia. He's written several amazing books. And so I thought, well, here's another book about how to beat sugar cravings. And I'll talk to him because he's always great to talk to. And he's come up with some truly brilliant ways of breaking down your sugar cravings. He breaks them down into four different subtypes with specific suggestions on how to overcome your sugar cravings. So listen to the podcast, and you may think of picking up his book, the podcast available at drhoffman.com with Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum just this week. All right, on the fibromyalgia front, headline, fibromyalgia linked to deficiencies in magnesium. Patients with fibromyalgia showed deficiencies in red blood cell magnesium, suggesting potential clues to the underpinnings of the condition and avenues for treatment. Well, duh. This is something that we've been doing for ages. Taking oral magnesium sometimes does the trick, but what really lights up the energy metabolism and relieves the pain of patients with fibromyalgia is something called a Myers cocktail. This is an intravenous cocktail. It's very, can be administered via a small IV bag or through a direct, what we call a push, a small amount of vitamins rich in magnesium are administered via vein in the arm. And patients, you know, after a couple of these things, the vast majority of patients with fibromyalgia begin feeling better because it is probably fundamentally a magnesium deficiency disease. I don't think I've seen a single patient with fibromyalgia who doesn't have a profound magnesium deficiency. And sometimes oral magnesium does the trick, but often you need to flood the system with magnesium. It's almost like jump starting. You know, in the old days, you know, before we had efficient cars, you had to, you know, put down the pedal and, you know, flood the carburetor a little bit and pump it a little bit. Well, that's a little bit what happens with the Myers cocktail. It just sort of jump starts the patient, restores the efficiency of their cellular pumps, and then they can absorb and retain their own magnesium. But without a little bit of a jump start with a Myers cocktail, that's sometimes difficult to achieve. So new study, belatedly, these studies are coming out suggesting, oh, lo and behold, magnesium is really important. Yeah, we knew that. Okay. This is an amazing item. New technology that is going to help gluten avoiders. You know, you pretty much can control things when you buy it at the store and, you know, you read a label and you take it home, you prepare your own food. That's one way to make, if you're gluten sensitive or if you have, even worse, celiac disease, where it's really crucial to avoid gluten, even a small amount the size of a vitamin pill of gluten can trigger your very serious gastrointestinal symptoms. So you really need to know. And, you know, yeah, you want to have a social life. Yeah, you want to go to a restaurant, try things. You're out in the field and, you know, got to grab a bite. So what are you going to do to make sure that the culprit is not somehow inveigled into your food? You know, so new technology. It's called NIMA, N-I-M-A. It's available for pre-order this month. It is a small portable sensor. It's like a Geiger counter for gluten. Consumers can use it to quickly detect whether the food in front of them contains gluten. Now, unfortunately, you can't just hold a wand over the food. What you have to do is you take a little capsule and you scoop up some of the food. It's a one-time use capsule, and you close it with a cap, and then you place the little capsule into a sensor in the machine, and you turn it on with a push of a button. If the food does contain gluten, a little blue sad face will pop up on NEMA's display. Wah, wah. It's got gluten. But if it's gluten-free, you'll see a happy face. Have a nice day. The sensor will detect if the food contains at least 20 parts per million of the gluten protein. That actually is pretty good. 20 parts per million. That's in adherence with the FDA's requirement that gluten-free food contain less than 20 parts per million. I mean, in other words, you may have like a smidgen, a molecule of gluten. That's not going to create a problem. Less than 20 parts per million. But the threshold of 20 parts per million, that is what can get people with severe gluten sensitivity in trouble. So what's the price point for this? It's on special. This is not a sponsor. I'm going to give them a plug. It's available at a discounted price of $179 starting on October 20th. The website is Six Sensor Labs, as the number six, sensor, S-E-N-S-O-R, labs.com website. And better grab one now because the price will increase to $199. But here's the catch. The device is a little bit like a Pez dispenser. Any of you old enough to remember Pez? Pez, right? Okay, so the dispenser's cheap, but the refills get you, right? It's a little like printers, right? The printer, $99 for the printer, but then every time you go for a cartridge, it's like $39.95, right? So the little sensor capsules will cost you $47.95 for a pack of 12. So let's say you're having like a four-course meal. That's four capsules. You know, add $10 to the price of your meal right there for the sensors. And then, you know, all the strange looks that people are going to give you when you have this little device with a smiley face or a frowny face on your table. But, you know, technology is amazing. It's interesting. All right. This item has to do with a problem that many couples experience, infertility. And often it's ascribed to the woman. But there's no question that sperm quality is declining. Men are shooting blanks, so to speak, because they don't have adequate numbers of sperm, or the swimming ability of the sperm is impaired. Okay? You know, sperm's got to do like, you know, a little bit of a, like a little, you know, it's got to swim up like it's like a salmon swimming upstream to spawn, and it requires a lot of energy. So, new study, very interesting study, the American Society for Reproductive Medicine reports that as carbohydrate intake and dietary glycemic load increase, sperm concentration decreases. So if you're trying to put a bun in the oven and you're slugging down a lot of soda, eating a lot of candy bars, having energy drinks, this may impair your sperm count and motility. Now, you think, well, maybe this was done on older men. This is not applicable. No, this is done on 189 men 18 to 22 years of age. So already at this young age where they're supposed to have maximum fertility and optimal sperm vitality, the high sugar diets affected the sperm quality. Interesting stuff. You know, yet another indictment of our high sugar diets. All right, this file this one under I Told You So. This is something I've been talking about for literally years. Is say you get a patient who comes to the office, as I do often, and they've been told they need to go on statins. Everybody these days is told they need to go on statins. You know, cholesterol's a little high, you have family history of heart disease, you're a certain age, you're an African-American male. By definition, they think you're at high risk for heart disease, so might as well go on a statin. So a lot of people come to my office for a second opinion. Do I really need to be on a statin? And by the way, I'm not inalterably opposed to the use of statins. Some integrative doctors are. They think it's just utter junk, never should be used, toxic poison. And I think there's certain circumstances where statins can make sense because although they have potentially bad side effects, what's worse, running the risk of some side effects or having a stroke or a heart attack? You know, we have to make a value judgment about which is worse. But let's say you're told you have high risk, and what do you do? Well, according to, finally, this is being picked up by the New York Times, I'm pleased to say, you do an ultra-fast CAT scan or an EBT heart scan to determine the calcium in your coronary arteries. And what they found was they looked at 4,000 men and women aged 45 to 84 of all races, and they were all told that they had to be on statins. But then they did EBT heart scans on them. They found that many of them had a zero score, no plaque discernible. And it turned out that the actual incidence of heart attacks or angina in those with zero calcium was half or less than half than what a standard risk calculator predicted. And therefore, these people had no business being on statins. Why put a person on statins when they don't need it? Okay. Keep in mind, this program is but the tip of the iceberg of the intelligent medicine phenomenon. We got lots more copy available at drhoffman.com. We got podcasts, we got stories, and you can subscribe to our newsletter. Be a part of intelligent medicine. Check it out. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.